Do you want to learn how to invest, or are you an entrepreneur and want to build companies in the regenerative food and agriculture space? Or do you work in big ag and big food and want to really move the needle? We have developed a new video course for you. Find out more on investinginregenerativeagriculture.com/course or in the show notes description below.
Today, a different conversation. We have an 85-year-old author and philosopher, and probably the most importantly, a gardener, about the role and your role and our role in nature, and what can investors do, and how to be humble, and so much more. Be ready for the energy coming out of your speakers, because Satish might be 85, but has more energy than most people I know. Welcome to another episode of Investing in Regenerative Agriculture, investing as if the planet mattered. Podcast show where I talk to the pioneers in the regenerative food and agriculture space to learn more on how to put our money to work to regenerate soil, people, local communities and ecosystems while making an appropriate and fair return. Why am I focused on soil and regeneration? Because so many of the pressing issues we face today have their roots in how we treat our land, grow our food and what we eat. And it's time that we as investors, big and small, and consumers start paying much more attention to the dirt / soil underneath our feet. In March last year, we launched our membership community to make it easy for fans to support our work, and so many of you have joined as a member. We've launched different types of benefits, exclusive content, Q&A webinars with former guests, Ask Me Anything sessions, plus so much more to come in the future. For more information on the different tiers, benefits, and how to become a member, check gumroad.com/investingregenag or find the link below. Thank you. So today, a very special episode with the founder and director of programs at the Schumacher College, an international center for ecology studies, and the editor emeritus of Resurgence and Ecologists. And mind you, he did a peace walk a few years ago of 8,000 miles, which is a bit more than the 10,000 steps that we all try to do per day. And very importantly, wrote a very interesting book on soil, soul, and society. Welcome, Satish.
My pleasure to be your guest.
And to start with a personal question, I have 1,000 questions probably, but why are you focusing quite a bit of your attention, your writing, and of course also your daily work on the soil, the food, and the agriculture space?
You know, in the world today, we all talk about economic growth and economy. But they don't understand what economy means. They think economy means money. But economy is a very beautiful word. And economy relates to ecosystem, ecology, and soil is the source of ecology. Soil is life itself. Everything what we have comes from soil. Our body is made of soil. Our food we eat is soil transformed. The mangoes, the oranges, the apples, the grapes, the bread, the rice, everything what we eat is nothing but soil. Houses are made of soil. The wood is soil. The stones are soil. So soil is everything. And at this moment, particularly, soil is important because of climate change. And the soil is the real bank of carbon. It can sequester and hold carbon. So at the moment, I would like all politicians, business leaders, corporate leaders, economists, educationists, all to focus on soil. Soil is a source of life.
And what would you tell then? It's soil seems also sacred, but yet there are many people that are saying if we don't quantify ecosystem services like the carbon piece you just mentioned, or the biodiversity and the water storage or infiltration, then we'll never get the investors interested. We'll never get the financial world, that is not the economy, but the financial world interested in it. I feel a tension there. Do you feel that too? And what would you say to people that are working on these ecosystem services and getting them payable, and that's maybe getting all the politicians, etc., interested in this dirt under our feet?
Yes, ecosystem services is a kind of metaphor. As long as you know that the measurement of nature can only be a kind of shorthand, in the long run, you cannot measure the value of nature, value of soil. You cannot measure how much your breath is worth. You cannot value how much your water is worth. If you pay more for milk and less for water, it's not less valuable. Just because you pay less than milk doesn't mean that water is less valuable. You can live without milk, but you cannot live without water. Just because something is free, the sunshine is free, but doesn't mean the sunshine has no value, even though you cannot measure how much sunshine is valuable. But you pay to go to France or to Italy or to Greece or somewhere for holiday or Goa. But the sunshine is freely given. So in the end, we cannot put monetary value on nature. But in the meantime, as a metaphor, just to communicate, to understand how valuable the natural systems are for us in monetary terms, we can use ecosystem services and that monetary value as a kind of shorthand on a very superficial level. But in the heart of heart, we have to understand that nature is beyond monetary value.
So it's, let's say it's a transition. We can use it now to get people hooked to the world of soil, the immense possibilities, and use it, even though we cannot properly fully measure nature, we can use a proxy, or we can actually kickstart the regeneration by using ecosystem services, even though we all know it's not perfect.
Yeah, our language is a kind of tool, and we can use the language to understand something deeper, which goes beyond language, beyond measurement. But our modern science and modern economy and modern technology somehow has to come to believe that what you cannot measure does not exist. Only what exists that you can measure. I think that is a bit too narrow a view. We have to say, yes, we can measure something. We can measure the length and breadth of something, but we cannot measure love. We cannot measure friendship. We cannot measure the value of a mother. How much the mother's breast milk, it may be very little for the baby. Only 4% or 3% of protein in mother's milk. And yet without that milk, we will not exist. So we have to always understand that there are measurement, and we can measure things, and they are important, they are matter, but there's more than matter, more than measurement, that is value. The meaning of what we are doing. You can measure the house is this long and this wide, but the meaning of the house is more how you live there. So measurement and meaning must come together. Measurement and meaning should be married rather than separated. At the moment, people have separated meaning from the measure, and they only value measure and they don't value meaning. This is the problem of our time.
You said language is important. I think we can all agree, or many would agree, ecosystem services is a horrible term. Do you have a better suggestion how to call these two, more marry those two? Like, we're measuring something, we know it's not perfect, but it gets us to a world of more meaning. Are there better terms that you know of that can capture a bit of the complexity and still something we can potentially measure?
I think I'm not denying the importance of measurement. For material things, you can measure. But there is a non-material aspect of life that you cannot measure. So meaningful measurement is my word. If you have a meaningful measurement, then ecosystem services can be a useful way to approach.
And let's talk a bit about Schumacher College, which I've heard about a lot. I've never been. I know a few people that have attended. Can you share a bit more about that story of how it started? Because you were there absolutely at the beginning, and where it, like, what it morphed into, what it evolved into now as we're talking end of October 2021.
Schumacher College is a nature-centered education. At Schumacher College, we say that education is not only to get a job.
I hope so.
To be successful in your life and have a big car or a big house, or have a name, fame, prestige, power, status, control. These are very egocentric education. Schumacher College is ecocentric education. We move from ego to eco. Eco is about relationship. We all exist in mutuality and reciprocity. So we educate our young people at Schumacher College so that they can go out in the world and live in harmony with nature look after the soil, look after the trees, and how we enhance our relationship on the basis of mutuality and reciprocity. And also at Schumacher College, we have education of head, education of heart, and education of hands. So all our students touch the soil. All our students partake in the gardening. And at Schumacher College is based at an estate called Dartington Hall. And this estate is 1,000 acres.
Wow.
And as a part of Schumacher College, we have two programs. Program number one is training in the gardening. So we have about 20 students coming to Schumacher College for 6 months. They come in April and they stay there until September. And these 6 months, they learn about all agroecological principles, permaculture principles. So agroecology, permaculture, Nordic gardening, organic gardening, biodynamic gardening, all methods of sustainable and regenerative gardening, so that we build the soil, because soil is the bank for carbon. Soil is the home for the millions of microorganisms. Soil is a source of life. And so we teach our young people how to look after the soil and how to build soil so that we can have economy of nature for millions and millions of years to come. But in addition to that 6 months program of gardening, we have a master's program in food and farming in a regenerative way. Regenerative food and farming. And that's a master's program. Because we, as I said, we have 1,000 acres of land. And we are looking for people to invest if they can and come with some funding as well. We need some funding. So we are going to use this 1,000 acre to create an example of regenerative farming, regenerative food system, and training young people. Because we think that at the moment, agriculture is neglected. In our society, we value computers and cars and industry and business and cities, and the farmers are kind of left behind. Only if you are uneducated, you are not smart, you are not clever, then you live in the village and you farm. And even the farmers don't want their children to go in farming, because farming has no money, no much capital. So everybody wants to go and work in a bank. If you are working in a bank, you get hundreds and thousands of euros or pounds or dollars paid to you. But if you are working on a farm, you're a farm laborer or farm worker or farmer, you get maybe 100 pounds or 200 pounds a day. So this is the kind of status of farming in our society is very, very low. At Schumacher College and at Dartington, we want to lift the status of farming. We want to say that farming is more important than banking. Farming is more important than creating computers. Farming is more important than politics. Farming is more important than industry. But without farming, there is no food. And without food, humans cannot exist. And in order to do good farming, we have to build good soil. Soil is a living soil. And we have to revere and respect the sacred living soil. So this is why at Schumacher College, we have these two programs to teach young people how to do regenerative gardening and how to do regenerative farming. And so I hope that your listeners can visit Schumacher College website and see what we are doing. And if they are interested, please get in touch with us and we can do some work together.
Absolutely. I will put the link below.
Yeah, we have land, but we are looking for some capital.
I will put the link below. And also, if people are interested, obviously, to attend the courses, to become involved in other ways, I think it's more than highly recommended. And what have you seen change over time? I mean, Schumacher College, I think, was founded 30 years ago. What has changed, if something? What has changed in the courses? What has changed in the outside world? Is there more attention or less attention? Has soil become more important finally? Or actually, we're at the same level as we were 30 years ago when you started?
You know, this is good news.
Let's start with that.
When we started Schumacher College, and when we started to talk about climate change, our first teacher was James Lovelock, the author of Gaia Hypothesis.
That wasn't bad. Yeah.
And at that time, James Lovelock was not listened to. People were not paying attention to the work of James Lovelock. And we were talking about climate change in 1991 and in the early 90s. At that time, they were not paying much attention Everybody say, oh, it's not man-made. It's nothing to do with us. It's a kind of natural phenomena happening. And sometimes people say, maybe there is no climate change. But now, in the last 30 years, there has been a tremendous transformation in consciousness. More and more people around the world are rising to the challenge and realizing that we are facing a climate catastrophe. If we don't change our way, if we don't use more natural resources and more renewable energy resources, we are facing a great urgency, and we are facing great catastrophe as well. Because, you know, the oil and the coal and the gas come from the underworld. We have to go deep down thousands of meters under the world to get this dark coal. I call it energy from the hell, because it's a dark energy and the underworld energy. So our answer to that is that we must go to the energy which is light energy, energy from heaven. If you have energy from the sun, energy from the rain, energy from the wind, energy from the water, that energy is light energy, free of charge, provided by nature. We should use that energy from heaven. If you use energy from the hell, you create hell on earth. If you use energy from heaven, you create heaven on earth. Therefore, the climate change, answer to climate change is use energy from heaven. Then we can, there's an abundance of energy. Can you measure how much energy the sun provides? Can you imagine how much energy there is in the ocean and the tides and the wind? So there is no shortage of energy. We have to be frugal. We have to use only what we really need and not waste energy. At the moment, we are too much wasting energy. And so in 30 years of time, since Schumacher College started, we have seen a tremendous transformation of consciousness, tremendous change in people's thinking. And now our courses at Schumacher College in gardening, in farming, in holistic science, in ecological design, in ecological and holistic economics, all the courses are being full. And there are many, many people want to come. And that's a great change, that young people want to go back to nature. Young people want to work on the land. Young people want to grow food. And it's becoming respectful. And this is a good news. And I would like to encourage your listeners to put their money in land. The real investment is land. If you put your money in the land, that is your much better bank than Barclays Bank or HSBC Bank or any Bank of America or any other bank. The soil is the real bank. So I will encourage your listeners to revere soil and see soil as a real bank, not only bank for carbon, but even your capital, your money you put in the soil, that money, that land will last forever. And that land will give you food and clothes and houses and trees and animals. Everything will be looked after. So real investment in the land and in the soil is a real investment.
And with this focus on, or with this growth of consciousness on climate change, also a lot of people, let's say, don't take the nature approach. They go for technology fixes, cellular agriculture, lab-grown meat. They go really to the, I would almost call it technological utopian. Like if we just fix a few technology things, we can grow a lot of food inside, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not here to debate that because we do that very often on the podcast, but I would wonder, what do you say when you meet people like that? Meet people that are in the city that are completely disconnected to nature. How do we get them on this journey as well? How do we get them to see the potential of the biomimicry movement, putting nature in the center and acknowledging that we are as much part of nature as anything else? How do we get more people to see that potential and to get interested in that instead of going for the quick fixes in the technology corner that all seem to save us constantly but never do?
Yes. You know, Einstein, the great scientist, he said that you cannot solve the problem with the same tools and the same mindset which created the problem in the first place. So the problems we face today in the world, including climate change, including the diminishing biodiversity and cultural diversity, and including all the pollution and waste we have today, is created by technology. created by industry, which is run by technology.
But then they say, if I say that, you cannot fix it. They say, yeah, but this technology is different. This time it's different. What do you say when somebody when you do a talk or when you did, now again, you will hopefully soon, when somebody stands up and we have technology, and what do you respond to that?
Technology has a place, but you must keep it in its place and not allow to think that technology can solve all your problems. Our problems are partly technological, and solutions are partly technological, but more importantly, our attitude towards nature. At the moment, we see nature as a resource for the economy. That attitude has to change. Nature is more than a resource for the economy. Nature is a source of life itself. We have to think that nature is not just out there. The birds, the animals, the mountains, the forests, the rivers, and the oceans. We are also nature. We are also made of the same elements as forests and mountains and animals are made of. We are made of earth, air, fire, water. We are made of consciousness. And earth is conscious. Nature is conscious. Nature is intelligent. Animals are intelligent. Trees have intelligence. So we have to change our attitude. This is a kind of attitude of deep ecology, where we say that nature has intrinsic value. As we recognize the rights of humans, we have to recognize the rights of nature. Nature also has rights. Rivers have rights. Forests have rights. The way we are treating nature at the moment is like war with nature. The way we are cutting down the rainforest in Amazon and in many other parts of the world is like war with nature. And the way we are treating animals in our factory farms in a cruelty way, that is also war with nature. So we have to make peace with nature. And so unless we change our attitude, unless we change our worldview, we are not going to solve problems just by technology. Technology has a place, but more importantly, our attitude, our values, and our spirituality, and our respect for nature, and the unity of nature and humans. Humans are nature. What we do to nature, we do to ourselves. If we pollute the water, we have to drink it. If we pollute the air, we have to breathe it. If we pollute the biosphere, atmosphere, we have to live with the global warming and climate change. What we do to nature, we do to ourselves. So unless we stop waste and pollution, unless we stop using nature as a resource for the economy and making more money, more profit, we are not going to solve problems. Technology is not the answer. Technology can go so far, but more than that, we have to change our attitude and our relationship with nature. We have to learn to live in humility with nature and in harmony with nature.
And so then I come back to the question, how do we bring people that are not seeing themselves as part of nature yet? What, in your experience of the last few decades, what is the best way to reconnect people with nature? Is it gardening? Is it walking in nature, forest? What has been the most effective or the best way you've seen people that are, those light bulbs go off like, oh, I'm actually part of this system and everything I do to myself. What has been your experience there?
Well, yes, I mean, your question is very good because at the moment we feel disconnected from nature and therefore we take nature for granted. But we are not in nature. We don't go in nature. So what I would like to say is that practically speaking, every person should spend at least a few hours a day or 2 or 3 days a week in the garden. When you touch the soil, when you touch the plants, when you touch the seeds, you know what nature is. And you know the magic of nature. You know the miracle of nature. You see nature, one seed of tomato becoming a plant and giving you 100 tomatoes. One seed of an apple tree giving you 1,000 apples. That miracle, that magic of nature, people don't know. People don't understand. Therefore, being in nature, walking in nature, I would say everybody, whoever you are, how busy you are, at least 1 hour, 2 hours every day, we should walk in nature, in the forest, along the river, among the trees, among the flowers, among the animals, and watch the birds, and see the butterflies, and see the bees. Unless you experience nature, you will not value nature. Unless you know nature, you will not love nature. And unless you love nature, you will not protect nature. So the way to do it is to, whether you are a prime minister or a corporate leader or a business leader or an economist or a professor or a king or a queen or whoever you are, you have to eat. And if you are eating, you must participate in growing the food. Even a prime minister, a president should have a garden and they should do some work in the gardening. That is the way that we can understand what nature is. Nature is miraculous, but we don't know nature. We know all the science of Tesco and BP and Shell and Apple and all the websites we know, but we don't know the trees. We don't know the animals. We don't know the butterflies. We don't know nature. So there is a nature deficit disorder in the world. And therefore, we need to reconnect with nature. We have to go out in nature, spend some time in nature. Don't spend 8 hours a day in front of your computer. Spend 8 hours or 2 hours or 3 hours or 4 hours, how much time you can spend out in nature, working in the garden, walking in nature, and writing poetry about nature, making a picture of nature, making a photograph of nature, painting a beautiful picture of nature. That is a way to reconnect with nature.
And then when we have reconnected, and imagine there's a theater, we're an old theater, and there are the listeners of this podcast are actually live with us, which we hope to do at some point. We are on stage and people have done that in the week before. They've reconnected to nature, but they also bring their professional background. They might have worked in companies. They might have set up companies. They might be investors because they sold companies, etc. So they have resources, either time, experience, and money. What would you, of course, we don't give investment advice, but what would you tell them? What should be next for them? What should be next after they are reconnected with nature? How should they apply their resources or put their resources to work to regenerate nature and to reconnect more people potentially with nature? What would you tell them? What would be some interesting places to get started?
To regenerate nature, we have to embrace the idea of circular economy. At the moment, our economy is linear. We take from nature, use it, and throw it away on the landfills. And we are wasting so much natural resources and plastic in the oceans and sewage in the rivers. So what we need to do is to invest your capital, your time, your talent, your energy in cyclical or circular economy. Whatever comes from nature must go back to nature. Economy of nature is circular, but the industrial economy is linear. We have to change industrial economy, which is linear economy, into the economy of nature, which is a circular economy. In nature, there is no waste. In nature, there is no pollution. All the trees come from the soil, become the trees, give leaves, give fruit, and go back to soil. And in between, you can eat and you can celebrate. So circular economy, where everything is going back to nature, and there's no waste, zero waste, and zero pollution. If you can invest your capital in zero waste, zero pollution, circular economy, then you are making a good investment for the future. If you are investing your money, which creates waste and pollution and a climate change and carbon emission, all that kind of investment is going to bring catastrophe to our children and grandchildren and many, many future generations to come. Therefore, wise investment is investment in economy, which is mimicking the nature. Nature's economy of nature is circular economy. So make that as your teacher. Nature is your teacher. Nature is our mentor. And if we can learn from nature, and the nature has survived for billions of years. Nature has been here for billions of years. But we humans, just in the last 300-400 years, we have made a mess of the world. And therefore, we have to be humble. And we have to say that we will learn from nature. Nature is our great teacher.
What would you do? Let's say tomorrow morning you wake up and you are an investment manager, not in a suit in London. I won't do that to you. You can stay in your beautiful house, but you have, let's say, a very, very considerable investment amount, let's say £1 billion. What would you focus on? You said land before. Would you spend it all on land? Would you focus on education, on technology, on food companies, on nature walks? What would you, if you turned an investor tomorrow morning, what would you?
I don't think any new investment is needed for new technology. We have got plenty of investment already in technology. There's no shortage of technology. Bill Gates of this world have already made a big mess of this world already with technology. So we don't need more investment technology. I would say either partner with a farmer and invest money so that the produce of the farm are transformed into food. So for example, if you are producing grapes, then grapes should be transformed on the farm into wine. And if you are producing milk, that should be transformed into cheese and butter and many other things. If you are transforming vegetables, transform them. If you are producing vegetables, transform them into more preserves so that farmers get better income. At the moment, farmers sell very cheaply to supermarkets. Supermarkets make a big profit and become rich, and farmers remain poor. I think we need to invest money to make farmers better off and live better life and have more respect and more dignity. At the moment, the dignity of farming is lost, and we need to bring back that dignity to farming. So I would say, if you have capital, if you have money, invest in land, make partnership with a farmer, and make farming, food should be a source of joy, a source of celebration, a source of not only food to eat, but also to celebrate. And that is missing at the moment. The factory farms are so ugly and so much wasteful and so much smelling and a bad smell. And it's bad farming at the moment. So make farming good farming. And I prefer also small farms. Invest in small farms, 50 acres, 100 acres, 200 acres, not large monolithic. In the United States, you can farm with 10,000 acres or 20,000 acres. In Australia, maybe you can get even 50 or 100,000 acres. That is a madness in farming. Farming is to love the land. Farming is to care for the land. Farming is to respect the land and work with the land. And if you don't put your hands in the soil and don't make your hands dirty, then you are not a good farmer. So always remember, dirt is not dirty. Dirt is sacred. Land and soil is sacred, and all farmers should touch the earth, touch the soil, and look after the animals, and look after the trees and the forests and plants. That is a true investment.
If you had a magic power to change one thing overnight in the food and agriculture system, what would that one thing be? Could be anything. Global consciousness, taste, no longer CAFOs, anything you can imagine. What would you change overnight if you had to change one thing?
One thing I would like to change is ban all artificial chemical fertilizers from the land, because those artificial fertilizers like pesticide and herbicide and all the other similar things should be totally banned. This should be seen as a crime against the soil, because soil is a living soil. If you feed people instead of feeding food and a good food and good fruit and good vegetables, if you feed people only with chemicals, human beings are not going to be very happy. Soil should be fed with good food, good compost. We have to build the soil with lots of good compost. And by putting herbicides and pesticides and chemicals and poisonous things into the soil is a crime against nature, like we are treating humans by feeding them only with chemicals. So soil is a living soil, and we should always respect that living quality. So that's one thing I would like to ban: all kinds of chemicals and poisonous herbicide and pesticide. The number two I would like to say is that ban all genetic engineering of seeds, because we have to respect the nature. Nature knows better than all the technological industrialists and the scientists put together. We need to humble and save our seeds, protect our seeds, and make farmers free to save their seeds so that they can use and use and reuse and reuse their seeds. So all genetic engineering of seeds should be banned. So no chemical pesticides, herbicides, and fertilizers, and no genetically engineered seeds. These are the two things absolutely essential in order to make good farming for the future.
How do we reach, because many poor communities are often also the most degraded, and maybe not even for the last 400 years, but for the last 10,000 years or even more since we started agriculture or started agriculture a bit more seriously. How do we reach like the poorest and the most degraded communities of this planet, which aren't in the UK where you're now or in the Netherlands where I am? There are different places. Is there a role for, let's say, the finance world, for investors? What do you see there as you have traveled a lot to reach the poorest?
You know, the communities are degraded because of the history of colonialism, imperialism, racism, slavery, and industrial exploitation. The Western European countries like UK, France, Netherlands, Spain, Italy, all these countries have been responsible for degrading the countries in Africa and Asia and South America. The Europeans have gone to South America, in Brazil and Mexico and the United States, which is North America and Canada. We have made a mess with our kind of arrogant thinking that we know better. We are civilized, and the people there in Africa and Asia are not civilized. So we have to go and civilize them. We have to bring them industry. We have to bring them a technology of the kind which they don't know. So that way, we have degraded and then deprived many, many small rural communities. And they have lost their value of land. They have lost the value of food. They have lost the skills to make clothes, to build houses. So poor are poor, not because they are stupid. Poor are poor because the powerful and rich nations have exploited them, suppressed them, ignored them. Therefore, we need to give them freedom and the land so they can grow their food, they can build their houses, they can make their clothes, they can make their shoes, they can make their furniture, they can live a good life. But they have the two hands. They have a tradition, they have a culture, they have intelligence, they have everything. Poor are poor not because of themselves. Poor are poor because of us, the very rich in the Western world.
And so what would you say to investors or also people, entrepreneurs that are starting companies or wanting to start companies in these more degraded areas, in the poorer places, because that's where most impact can be made. That's where the potential of impacting as many lives as possible and impact as much soil as possible is potentially the greatest. How do we approach it without making the same mistakes as we've made in the past and we're still making, because we're still trying to push technology, we're still trying to push we know better, let's educate, et cetera, et cetera. How do we approach that differently to make sure we don't make that mistakes? Because we can bring something in some cases, some resources, some experience, some money, obviously, or processing or markets that are interested in the coffee, the cacao, and a lot of produce from there. How do we approach that differently to make sure we don't fall in the same trap?
First of all, when we invest money in poor countries like India or Africa or many other countries, we have to say the people who are living in the villages, they should remain in the villages, because village is a very beautiful part of nature. Village surrounded by trees and birds and lakes and rivers and beauty and a serenity. Just the idea that we all need to have be brought into industrial system of urbanized and roads and cars and a kind of aeroplanes and airports and seaports and all that kind of infrastructure is not necessary. Villages are very beautiful, they have integrity, they are natural, and they have less impact on nature, and they are frugal, and therefore that village culture, the rural culture, and the rural reconstruction should be maintained. Number two, when you are going into third world countries like Africa or Asia, do not think that you know better. Give them land. If the poor people have no land, give them some help to buy the land or have the land so that they have land. If you have land, that will give you work. Land will give you employment. Land will give you jobs. Land will give you food. Land will give you trees and fruit and herbs. Land will give you houses. Land is the source of life. So if you can help people to have land, that is one thing, a good investment. And then, of course, when they are producing food and so on, they can share back something to the investors. I have no difficulty. 5%, 10% of their produce can be given back to the investors. But the 80 to 90% of investment should benefit the local people who are being helped. And the land is the best investment. That's what I would say. And let the farmers and the laborers and the workers in the rural areas develop their own culture and develop their own wisdom. You don't have to export wisdom, which is not really so much wisdom, from the Western countries and the industrial technological paradigm. They don't need it. Rural paradigm with agro culture, agroeconomy, and agricultural culture. Agriculture, that's a real culture. So we have to be humble. The Western people who are investing money in poorer countries, they have to be humble and they have to respect the poor. Poor have wisdom more than we, the rich, think they have. And so we need to respect them.
And I want to ask, I always say final question, it never is, but at Schumacher College, like of seeing this movement, you've traveled the world, you've walked the world actually, what has been the biggest surprise over the last 30, 40, 50 years? Like what makes you wake up in the morning with so much energy, which sort of radiates even through the screen? I mean, I can see the video, people can only hear the audio, but I would definitely encourage people to watch some talks, etc. What keeps you so energetic, and what has been that surprise or that flame of energy that keeps you going?
What keeps me going is the young people. I'm amazed that how increasing number of young people are waking up.
Is it really that different from 20, 30 years ago? Because I live in my bubble, but you've seen that difference. You've seen that growth.
Yes, I've seen the difference. The Greta Thunberg generation is something amazing. And there are hundreds of thousands of young boys and girls around the world are marching for climate change and climate sustainability and ecology and regenerative agriculture. Hundreds of thousands of young people in India, in China, in Africa, in America, in Europe, everywhere. This is a great new development. And at Schumacher College, young people are coming to learn gardening. Young people are coming to learn how to live in harmony with nature. They don't want PhD for their personal success. So this change among the younger generation gives me tremendous hope. I'm 85 years old. And when I see young people coming up to me and saying that we want to learn about how to grow food and how to live simple life, and they are buying my book, Elegant Simplicity, and they are buying my book, Pilgrimage for Peace, and they want to say, we want to do something like you did when you were young. That is a great change, and that gives me hope. And the young people are giving me the energy which I have, the passion which I have, and the enthusiasm which I have, and the hope which I have. So it's the young people who are the hope for the future.
I cannot imagine a better end of this conversation. I hope that it's not the last one. I know we have to be conscious of time. You have a very busy schedule, and I'm very much looking forward to checking in what's happening at Schumacher, what's happening with the land there, and what's happening in general in your life. So thank you so much, Satish, for your time today, and wishing you a wonderful rest of your day and a wonderful weekend.
It has been my pleasure to be your guest and be in conversation with you.
If you found the Investing in Regenerative Agriculture and Food podcast valuable, there are a few simple ways you can use to support it. Number one, rate and review the podcast on your podcast app. That's the best way for other listeners to find the podcast, and it only takes a few seconds. Number two, share this podcast on social media or email it to your friends and colleagues. Number three, if this podcast has been of value to you and if you have the means, please join my membership community to help grow this platform and allow me to take it further. You can find all the details on gumroad.com/investingregionag or in the description below. Thank you so much, and see you at the next podcast.